Hello, listener. This is Dino Wright, ahead of our screening and live talkback of this 1985 classic on Wednesday, March 27, 2024, at SteelStacks in Bethlehem, PA. Here's our original episode on Crushed Groove. Free tickets are still available if you go to steelstacks.org. Welcome to Hip Hop Movie Club, where three old heads put their old heads together to vibe on some of the most memorable or forgettable hip hop themed movies of all time. And here's HHMC with your HHMCs, Boogie, JB, and Dino Wright. Season 5, Episode 2, Crushed Groove. Written by Ralph Farquhar and directed by Michael Schultz and produced by Michael Schultz, George Jackson, and Russell Simmons. Released in 1985 and featuring Sheila E., Blair Underwood, Run DMC, Fat Boys, Curtis Blow, and New Edition. We'll answer the question, just how deaf was the origin story of Def Jam recordings?
Crush Groove is a 1985 comedic musical film which is a semi-biographical depiction of Russell Simmons' beginnings in the record industry as he develops Def Jam Records. In the movie, Blair Underwood plays the role of Russell Walker, whose story parallels that of Russell Simmons. He has signed Run DMC to his Crush Groove label, as well as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and Curtis Blow. But money becomes an issue, as well as family and business loyalties, as well as a love interest. It's chock full of amazing early hip-hop appearances and cameos, which is the hallmark of this classic. All right, Boogie, I know you have the most experience with this film early on. Why don't you kick us off on your thoughts of this movie?
Yeah, I mean, Crush Groove is, it's one of those movies I kind of put it almost in the same realm of Beat Street, where it's like, if you're a fan of hip hop, you kind of have to watch it at some point to just kind of see the ins and outs of how Def Jam got itself off the ground. There's some exaggeration and some character changes made to the movie, but it's pretty accurate as far as what you would see in the beginning of Russell Simmons starting off the label. This movie is so fun. It's not that long and it goes by pretty quickly, but it's very fun in the fact that you get to see a lot of hip hop greats in their early careers. Of course, Run DMC are the headliners of the movie, but you get to see the King of Rock himself, Curtis Blow, playing a more of an advisory producer sort of role. But you do get to see some of his performance as well in his stage presence. So it's always good to see Curtis Blow out there. The Fat Boys, their actual beginning was very similar to this. They actually did get discovered in a Tin Pan Apple talent contest. So shout out to the Fat Boys. I mean, they stole the scenes wherever they were because they were just comedic geniuses and great lyricists on top of that. So anytime that they're on screen, you get a nice little treat from them. Sheila E., she's a gem. This is another side of her that, you know, outside of her well-known percussionist and her association with Prince. But yeah, she was a fan of hip hop and she was kind of infused in the game, as you get to see it. She was actually on Rush Management label as well with Def Jam. So yeah, she's in there and you get to see an early young and spry LL Cool J on camera performing one of his songs that was made specifically for the movie Radio. And he's so energetic in his early days. So it's always good to see him performing. But yeah, I mean, the movie is great. It's not going to win like an Oscar or anything like that, but it's very entertaining and it goes by quickly. And I do think that, you know, if you ever, anyone out there listening gets a chance, definitely check this out and let us know what you think about it.
Yeah. Dino Wright, you want to add anything early on here?
Sure. I agree. It wasn't not exactly the great cinematic triumph of writing and story, but it's really fun. It's just so fun. An all rap musical. How can you beat that? With all of these acts, that, and they're so young. Wow. 17-year-old LL Cool J. The BC Boys right at the beginning of their career. Ooh.
Yes.
Ooh. Oh, it was amazing just to see. I've been wanting to get to one of these old school hip hop concerts for people, like revivals. And this kind of took me to one. And some of my favorite acts of all time, Run DMC, Beastie Boys, they're like top five for me. And New Edition is kind of in the early stages. They win a contest with Bobby Brown and the Bell Biv DeVoe guys and Ralph Tresvant. And it's just like, oh my God, they were so young.
Yeah.
So young. Like they were kids.
They were kids. Yeah. They were like the first, maybe the, well, I can't say the first boy band, because you can go back to Partridge Family and all that, whatever, you know, but like the big commercialized kind of like produced boy band that,
yeah, that took was off. Like the prototype stereo. Yeah.
They were just
boy band. Huge. Yeah.
They were a good successor to the Jackson 5, I think.
Yes.
Starting in the 80s, that era, like, it starts with New Edition, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And wasn't it the same, like, producer or founder that then founded the New Kids on the Block, because they were in the Boston area? Like, that's where New Edition was from.
Yeah.
I can't remember the guy's name, but yeah, that spawned off of, like, the success of New Edition. But I pay close attention to the intros, and, like, it starts off with the King of Rock, the rap, you know, I'm like, yes, I love this jam. And then I'm just hooked. And I see the name Ernest Dickerson pop up, who did the cinematography. I didn't realize how far back he went, because, you know, he did the cinematography for Do the Right Thing, which we spoke about. And he was involved with some of the other films we mentioned. So
yes,
he had a storied career.
Yeah, he was director of photography for this movie. But
yeah.
Not to be overlooked is Michael Schultz, the director who directed Disorderlies and Coolie High and Car Wash, and also directed Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and The Jerk 2, which no one would think no one thinks were great movies. But yeah, just a heavyweight between Ernest Dickerson and Michael Schultz. You've got some...
Yeah,
multiple classics.
You mentioned Car Wash at the beginning of the Fat Boys working at the Car Wash, I think, as well as Russell. They all worked at a car wash. That's how they became friends. And there was a scene where someone was spitting
on his head.
Head spit on top of the car. And then
Master J had the DJ setup going.
Yeah, that was great right at the beginning, if you caught that. And the Fat Boys, like, always self-deprecating humor, like the one guy's making like either a bundt cake or an upside down cake for his lunchbox. I was dying right away.
Yeah, that was cool Rock Ski had the cake. Yeah.
And then in the science class, was it like they were doing the science experiments? I think it was like a fetal pig, and he has it on a spit thing. Roasting, yeah. As if he's doing like a pig roast.
So good.
I was dying.
So good.
And the beatboxing behind the teacher's back and getting kicked out of class. Like, that was great. They were such good beatboxers, and I thought that was hilarious.
Shout out to Darren Robinson. Shout out to Buffy Love.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was good stuff.
But there's so many songs, and like it's kind of like you said, it's a musical kind of. So like right after that, they get kicked out of class, and then the Fat Boys do that Don't You Love Me rap, and the whole school is just jamming into it, enjoying it.
Yeah, that was my song. I love that part.
That's cool. There's the family aspect of it, just like in real life. Had a Russell Simmons, it's a brother of Rev Run, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that kind of, you know, was the behind the scenes, the producer. And in the film, Blair Underwood plays that role of Russell Simmons, known as Russell Walker, right? So that was interesting. And then I think you had a tidbit, Boogie, about their dad being the Reverend.
Oh yeah. Their actual father was played the role of their father in the movie. Yeah. Which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool. And he's asking him for money, and there was a funny line there where he's like, Lionel Richie ain't working at no car wash. He's like, oh, you're Lionel Richie? He's Prince.
He's Barry Gordon.
Yeah, Barry Gordon, right. We just mentioned Barry Gordon. Yeah. Russell was asking his dad for $5,000 to fill an order of like 10,000 records because King of Rock was becoming a big hit, and they were producing the records and they couldn't keep up. So that's kind of the basic storyline as to like some of the conflict will occur because they're short on money to a kind of a startup. And along the way, they see Sheila E. performing at the Disco Fever Club, and she puts on an electric performance. Her songs were great. And, you know, they were talking to her about, you know, record deals and whatnot. And it was funny, you know, they, Rick Rubin, who was partners with Russell Simmons for all those years, and, you know, they produced the music for Run DMC and started up Def Jam and the Beastie Boys eventually. He plays himself in the film, which is cool.
Yeah, Rick is there.
Hey, Rick Rubin's a legend. And he and Russell in the movie, you know, they go for a loan at a traditional bank, and they were kind of hesitant to say that, you know, what kind of music is, like, rap? And it was kind of, I guess it was taboo. They wouldn't give him a loan. Little did they know, you know, rap, hip hop would become so huge.
I looked it up. $5,000 in 1985 is about $14,000 now. So imagine, like, not giving $14,000 for the birth of hip hop.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, they, hey, I mean, people were so conservative in the 80s, so I could see that happening. I wonder if there's truth to that as part of the real Def Jam story, how they went to a traditional bank and, you know, they were kind of profiled being that these young urban guys trying to produce rap music and they wouldn't lend to them. So
I looked into that. So I was reading something, maybe it was Wikipedia, but there was they have a section about what was real or differences between film and reality. And
yeah, it's in Wikipedia.
Yeah, and then
according to Wikipedia, or at least according to their source, which is oldschoolhiphop.com, the money issues were made for the movie.
Okay.
But
yeah, he didn't borrow from a loan shark.
Yeah. By the way, he went by the name of JB. No relation to me.
No relation to
right.
I thought about and that.
I'm not a loan shark / fur trader, as it says.
Yeah, fur trader.
What
are you fighting in the French and Indian War? What is fur trader?
Oh, that's hilarious.
Louisiana Territory.
I know. Let me trade
Lewis
some pelts.
Lewis and Clark.
Trade some pelts for some records.
Pelts.
Oh, Sacagawea.
Get Sacagawea on the phone.
Oh, my God.
I was like, what is that all about?
Shady
business card.
That was funny. Yeah. Who was the guy who played JB?
Oh, man.
Richard Gant.
Richard Gant. Okay.
Richard Gant, yes.
Oh, yeah. I've seen him in a lot of things. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of things.
He's been in a few things.
Yeah.
Quite a few things, actually. But I remember when Sal, who was in the Fever, told Russell from the beginning to stay away from him and not to do business with him. He said, that guy's bad news. You know, stay away from him.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Russ, after not being able to get the loans, decides to give JB a call.
Yeah.
Business with him. Bad news. Yeah.
You knew that was going to come back to haunt him or cause issues. It was just kind of predictable there. But Curtis Blow, I did the, you know, the If I Ruled the World song, which, yes. What a resplendent outfit with the top hat, yes. The jerry curls, the cane. Oof. He was pimping it out. I mean,
oof.
Yes.
Our generation and even younger might know Nas's version of, you know, If I Ruled the World. They may not know that Curtis Blow had that song prior, which was great.
It made me think, you know, of all the acts that were in this movie, I feel like Curtis Blow had the smallest career. I don't know. What do you guys think? I thought he should have been bigger. I feel like had a bigger career.
I mean, Curtis Blow had a ton of albums and records. I just think maybe the timing wasn't right just yet.
Yeah,
for
I
could
see
up.
That. Yeah,
he was kind of.
Yeah,
I mean, he was a pioneer. I think so. Yeah, I mean, he was a great lyricist.
Oh yeah,
I love his basketball song. He had
a great song. Yeah. Such a great song.
Yeah. I was wondering the same thing. That was funny. You bring that up. Dino Wright is like, why wasn't Curtis Blow? Why didn't he hit it quite as big as Run DMC and those guys? But
yeah,
I think he was kind of like more mild mannered. He wasn't like self promoting. I don't think he was just there. But
yeah, like Run DMC, they had a larger than life persona. Where Curtis Blow. Well respected, but he was very mellow in his demeanor in comparison.
Yeah,
and that could probably be what it was, because you know, at the beginning, you know, people were like looking for something different. It was like against the system, and Run DMC and their lyrics and their delivery was very in your face, like very loud, like they had a lot of rock behind their, you know, their production. So it was very where Curtis Blow was more mellow. It was like not disco-y, but it was mellower in the delivery. And I think that's where the appeal caught on with a lot of the younger crowd that was catching on.
Right.
They wanted to emulate the persona of Run DMC. They were just like, yeah, we're kicking down doors. This is what we do. You don't like it, so what?
Yeah, I can see that. It feels like there's more of an edge to the beats that Run DMC used. And maybe Curtis Blow is like the rapper's rapper.
Yeah.
He's the guy with the skills. But, and also, like you said, JB, he came along pretty early and maybe he walked so that Run DMC could run. No pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended.
I was like, I walked right into that.
Well, there was so, you know, that era, like more like late 70s, early 80s, Curtis Blow, Houdini, like Houdini could have become just as big. They had a lot of great songs too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, the timing, so the economy like improved and Run DMC, like the beats, they had the swag, they came out with the Adidas. They had the whole package, really.
Yeah. You even see that in the film. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're buying like multiple like sets of Adidas.
Yeah.
Oh man, those red and black Johns were like hot.
So good.
But even the way they carried themselves, it was almost like a gangster persona, like a mafia type gangster persona. Like they had the blazers, but they were leather blazers and the hat. And it was like very like emulating a lot of a mafia type of persona, which was, you know, very romanticized, you know, in urban society. You know, we watch a lot of gangster films. They definitely had the full package, because I mean, you look at another act that was in the movie, like Jekyll and Hyde. Like most people don't even realize that Jekyll and Hyde was who they were. You know, they were pretty dope, and even like Jekyll, Andre Harrell went on to be one of the biggest people in the record biz as far as pushing the music and pushing hip hop and just being all around like. I don't want to say like he was pretty larger than life when it comes to his role in hip hop moving forward. If not, just as well as Russell Simmons.
Run DMC, I mean, they had really catchy songs and catchy beats that you want to beat and gets like an earworm. And it's like that. And that's the way it is. Remember, you talk too much and you never shut. It's like,
yeah.
And then they went on, you know, obviously it ended a huge smash when they teamed up with Aerosmith, Walk This Way. That one, it went mainstream. Well, the Raising Hell album was just insane. But even before that,
Hell album really changed the game.
Yeah dude.
Mm-hmm. I love that one. I wore that out.
I don't think I knew this, but Andre Harrell, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah, a couple of years ago. Yeah.
He gave, he discovered Puffy.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Uptown Records.
Uptown Records.
In the movie, there's this guy Beaker for Galaxy Records. He's trying to get in on the cash in and offering Russell like $20,000 to sign over all of his acts to him. And you know, that's very tantalizing at that time, right? Mm-hmm. And he kind of buddies up with him for a little while, but again, there's that familial struggle, like I'm sticking my brother and whatnot, and you know, it all turns well out in the end. But that was Beaker showing him the lifestyle that could have. He's in the limo, like champagne and whatnot. It's kind of like a foreteller of things to come for the hip hop game.
Yeah, Beaker actually, he convinces them to sign with him. You know, he told Run, he's like, yeah, you know, I made the offer to your brother and he turned it down. This is what he's doing to you. Like, does he have your best interest? And after Run and Russell get into it, Run decides to, you know, tell everybody else, like, hey, listen, you know, the two, you know, me, DMC, and Jay, we got to look out for ourselves. And they end up signing them. Curtis Blow, who's one of Russell's best friends, as well as one of the acts with him, goes over to talk to him and say, hey, listen, man, you know, he gave me the same kind of offer. And Russ was like, yeah, man, just take the money, man. He's like, it's not even about the money. Like, we were friends before all of this. You know, what should I do? I came here for your advice, not to rub the money in your face. And Russ was like, yeah, just take the money, take the deal. You know, this is over. But you can even see on his face, you know, Curtis Blow's not even happy being there. He's not even celebrating. He's just like, yeah, this doesn't even feel right.
Yeah.
It's like, where do you balance the money over the loyalty to your family? Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier the ad that the fat boys see in the newspaper, and they're doing some auditions, and they close up auditions, and young LL Cool J comes, and he can be more than like 20, early 20s or something.
17.
He
was 17 there. Oh my God. Oh, yeah. The Kango hat, and he just ripped off that "Can't Live Without My Radio," and which was, like you said, it was written for this movie. I didn't realize that. That was awesome.
Yeah. But it was crazy how that whole scene, every time I look at it, I notice something different.
Yeah.
I remember the first thing I noticed is like when he comes, like they're saying no more auditions, and he kind of just walk on by. Jam Master Jay jumps up and puts his hand in his jacket. Like he was about to, he was going to grab a gun.
I noticed that right away. Like, is he about to start?
Yeah. And then I think like, even after he finishes performing, they were like, man, listen, you was about to shoot him. Like, oh man.
And that just makes it so amazing that Russell Simmons, who was behind the production of this movie, put this on film. And yeah. LL Cool J at age 17 and New Edition and all those guys that became so big and Beastie Boy, like this is all documented for us to see here. It's just like,
yeah,
I'm just blown away.
Yeah.
It's like a time capsule.
Yeah. That I said Maurice White back earlier. It's actually Maurice Starr. I got my Maurice's mixed up.
Okay. Right.
Maurice Starr was the one who New Edition and New Kids on the Block. I forgot to mention that New Edition was supposed to be a new edition of the Jackson 5. So that's where that name came from. So,
nice.
Not an accident.
So the first talent show, New Edition wins it. And that was funny. And then yeah, that silly scene, the buffet scene with the Fat Boys. All you could eat for $3.99, man. They housed that place.
Sbarro. That was real. That was real. I remember the Sbarros having that.
Yeah. Man, they took plate after plate after plate, and it even had like the bagged salami and the cheese that strung up.
They ate so much that the manager tried to charge them more money.
Yeah.
And they ran out.
So that was the one. Well, I have a couple different gripes because, again, it's kind of like cheesy. But how could they run after that feast? Man,
I was totally expecting them to throw up when they got to the end of that scene. Like, they're supposed to barf. Like, what happened?
No physical condition. They just ate probably in the 10,000 calorie range each.
Yeah, really.
And they just literally sprinted down the couple blocks to escape the manager of the Sbarro. I was like, that's not realistic, but and it was funny.
Mm-mm-mm.
It's almost cartoonish kind of eating.
Yeah.
Oh man.
And when Beastie Boys comes out with She's On It, and I think that was produced really for the soundtrack as well. And man, those guys were young. They were teens probably too in this movie.
Yeah,
I would think, because this is released in 85, right? And this was probably slightly before the License to Ill album came out.
Yeah, I'm looking it up.
So... Yeah, I remember listening to License to Ill in 86.
Yeah. Yeah, License to Ill came out in 86, right?
So yeah, this crazy that this movie was released, was it October of 85?
October 85, and then yeah. License to Ill was November of 86, so...
Right, and I know She's On It was not on that album, so it was like really like an EP or LP, whatever, like single for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But just taking back real quick to that whole scene with the Fat Boys, Like they were originally going by the moniker the Disco Three, but after that whole All You Can Eat episode, you know, they decided to embrace the fact that they were indeed fat and that they were going to be calling themselves the Fat Boys moving forward. Because even when they performed, you know, the Pump It Up, Get Funky song at the contest, they were kind of reserved in how they performed. Whereas, you know, New Edition was all over the place. They were doing it. So, you know, New Edition won, rightfully so. They had a better performance, better stage presence. But, you know, they were upset and Curtis Blow saw them and said, hey, listen, you know, if you guys show up at the next show, I mean, sometimes they need an alternate. And if they do need an alternate, I'll make sure to get you guys in. You know, luckily, you know, for them, New Edition did have to cancel because they had some kind of contractual obligation in L.A. So they couldn't perform and they were in the right place at the right time. And Curtis Blow held up his end and got them their break and let them into that finals for that contest where they embraced their robustness and performed their title song, Fat Boys. And they tore it down. Everybody went nuts for that song.
Yeah, but that whole thing where they changed their name, you know, after the buffet, that was obviously, you know, fabricated for the story as well. Because yeah. I think when we covered Disorderlies, we talked about, I think, how they got their name. I thought it was a manager or like they ran up this huge hotel bill or something.
Yeah,
like
they were
that.
On tour. Yeah, they were on tour in Europe.
Yeah, exactly. And tour in Europe, and they ran up this hotel and they called them Fat Boys and they stuck with them. But yeah, that was funny.
In a way, it's a good little example of fat positivity. So even though it's not actually how it happened, it's nice to portray in film.
Yeah, there was a scene, I may skip past it out of sequence here, but when Run DMC was supposed to come on stage, but they introduced Sheila E.
Yes.
Instead, Sheila E. tore it up, but Russell was ticked off about that and confronted Run about that. That was a point of contention between them, saying, why, you have to let me know if you're ever going to do something like that. The crowd is expecting Run DMC and they come out, he comes out just to introduce Sheila E. However, following that, I think that's when Run DMC came out and tore it down.
Run had the chip on his shoulder after that whole confrontation. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to let everybody know that it was his house. Yeah. You say, listen, man, they have to scream and Run DMC, not Russell DMC.
And they bring it, this is my MF home. Whose house? Run's house. He gets the crowd all hype. And then he goes, it's like that. And that's the way it is, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then you see the friction to the kind of mini love triangle where Run is really into Sheila E, but Sheila kind of rebuffs him. And then she goes home with Russell. And obviously, you know, the brothers have that kind of awkwardness to them. But then towards the end, you know, there's the realization that she likes Russell, where she only sees Run as kind of a brother figure.
Yeah. Run is like, yeah, I remember he looks at Russell. He's like, she likes me. But she likes you.
Yeah.
Over the money situation, as Curtis Blow kind of roughs up Russell, right? And then that forced Russell goes to see Sheila E. like at 3 a.m. towards the end.
JB's henchman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I saw it. Well, I don't know if I'm getting confused. Full Force beat up. This guy's from Full Force ended up beating up Russell towards the end as well.
Yeah, they roughed him up in the club.
Yeah,
and then they said we're gonna come back for you if you don't get the money to in a day. And then Russ went into hiding and ran straight to Sheila's apartment.
And that's when the Force MDs come on with Tender Love. When that song came on, my eyes lit up like, no way! I haven't heard that song in years.
Yeah.
That's one of the great slow jams. Oof.
Yeah, a couple of those guys have just recently been passing away too. On the Force MDs.
It has a quintessential classic 80s like R&B slow jam right there. Tender Love. We should put that into the show notes or YouTube for that. But it's funny, Full Force, that's kind of like the House Party connection. That's where the villains in House Party.
Yep.
Yep.
And they reference the Crush Groove in House Party 2, or House Party also.
Yeah, I was Zilla and Stab. House Party.
Good recollection, yeah. You know, Run goes to see Russell as he's healing up, and they reconcile. And, you know, Run's been making, making some good money on his own, and he ends up giving money to Russell to repay his loan to JB, and kind of washes hands of that situation. And then, you know, all is good at the end. Oh, the other funny scene I remember when the Fat Boys win that second talent contest, Tin Pan Apple. Remember when they were so excited that the second place prize was
the new stereo
equipment. So as they're even announcing the winners, and that guy Chad, who wasn't really that great, right? He starts like stealing that stereo equipment from him. And meanwhile, the first place prize was the record deal, and they're like still fighting for the stereo equipment.
He's like, get over here, man! Get over here.
Mm-hmm. That's comical.
And Marky D finally got the girl that he had a crush on. He out there making out with her.
Yep.
And stole her from a very muscular.
Yeah.
You know, real diesel guy.
Yeah, that guy was like a wedge. He was like he had the upper body, and then it came down exactly like a.
That guy was like a textbook.
Hilarious. Yeah. All the Fat Boys got women in the end, and it's funny is they kind of came full circle because remember they were shut out of that Disco Fever club. I think they had the fake IDs, and then he kind of like charmed the bouncer a little bit by being able to rap and beatbox. Like, okay, you guys can come in, but then he's like, "Oh, it's $10 cover charge," and that was a little bit too steep for them.
Yeah,
they couldn't afford to get in.
It was funny.
Yeah. Another thing I did notice too was when Russ was having the difficulties, his money issues, trying to figure out how to pay JB back, he came up with the epiphany that, hey, we're going to record Sheila. So he runs over to Rick and is like, Rick, come on, man, let's get ready. We got to record Sheila. So they actually record Sheila and press some records to get Sheila out there. But JB had already started blackballing Russ and told nobody to play his record. So everywhere Russell was going, nobody would play the song. So yeah, you got a hit on your hands, but you can't make any money off of it. And you can't make any money off of it to pay the loan back. So now the guy's, you know, saying, hey, how's our record company going?
Yeah.
You know, like, don't make me, drop you to your knees, Russ. You know, threatening Russ, but, luckily, after his henchmen rough Russ up, Run came through with the funds and cleared that all up. But I was like, wow, he can't even make any money because they won't even play anything from him. And Sal told him again, he's like, I told you at that point. I told you not to mess with that. I was like, yeah, man, he did. He definitely told you. I saw him. I saw him tell you.
Sounds right.
That's about right. We're on the tape. Yeah, I felt bad for him because you could see the stress on his face. Mm-hmm. Everywhere he went, JB was there looking at him.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm going to wrap you in a fur and drop you in a river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the climax, though, of the movie, though, was after everything is clear and they all end up at the Fever together, and they perform the title track. I love that song. Yeah. Crush Groovin'.
Man. Yeah, that's what whenever I heard that movie title, I just keep thinking that song. That's a great song. It has all of them performing on it.
Yeah. I think that song is actually, I made it one of my throwbacks. Crush Groove is on the first one.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
I think I remember that. Yeah, I have a copy of that. And it started with Fat Boys Go First on that, and then Run DMC, mm-hmm. Sheila E., Curtis Blow. I thought, funny scene in the credits, one of the Fat Boys is doing the worm.
Yeah, he's doing the worm.
I was like, what?
Buff is doing the worm.
Buff, yeah.
And LL was dancing. LL.
He was there. Yeah, dancing.
Yeah. But there's some other, you want to talk about some of the other cameos. What you know about Donnie Simpson, Boogie?
Oh, Donnie Simpson was my main man.
Yeah.
He was the 10-pin apple contest MC at the finals. But Donnie Simpson was Mr. Video Soul and all those, you know, fabulous back in the day BET shows that he was on. He was one of the original VJs from back in the day. Donnie Simpson's the man.
Yeah, he was recruited by Robert Johnson, the founder of BET, to host that Video Soul show, which was their primetime music video show. And he had all these interviews and specials with like mega stars like Stevie Wonder, Prince, yeah. Jay-Z, you know, Notorious B.I.G., David Bowie, Mariah Carey. Like, he was the man. He still might be on the radio out there.
Yeah.
In D.C., I think.
Yeah. I think he's still going. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Oh, yeah. And we, you know, we mentioned the Full Force guys, but Russell Simmons is actually in here as well. Yep. He's Croc. He plays Crockett. He was the guy at the show where that was harassing Russell. Well, Blair Underwood's character, Russell Walker. Where are they at? And then they show up and they put Sheely on stage. And yeah, that was actual Russell Simmons was actually in the movie. I remember when I first saw it, I didn't know that until I got a little older and I saw his face. And I'm like, wait a minute, that was Russell. Yeah.
Yeah, just a reminder, we mentioned New Edition, but for the younger generation or the folks that may not know, I mean, that whole band, megastars, you know, Belle Biv DeVoe, we're all in there. Ricky Bell, Michael Bivins, Ronnie DeVoe, Ralph Tresvant, and Bobby Brown. Everybody should know.
I was talking about New Edition with some people that I know. And like, you know, this big thing now is the verses. I was like, New Edition could do a versus against themselves.
Yeah.
When you think about it, you know, Ralph has a solo career. Bobby had a solo career. Belle Biv DeVoe obviously had their group success. And then you have the whole collective of New Edition.
Yeah.
You know, and then add to the mix, Johnny Gill.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't a member at the time, but he's had a solo career as well, man. New Edition could do a versus against themselves. But it's good to see them in their younger age, you know, their younger years in Crush Group, you know, full on shiny suit before Diddy was wearing them.
Maybe that's where we got the idea from.
What was your guys' favorite New Edition song? I'm torn between Cool It Now and like Mr. Telephone Man. Like, they were both such iconic.
Yeah.
I think it's Mr. Telephone Man for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my favorite might have been Cool It Now at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like crazy. Cool. I had that album on wax at Ryder, and it was one of my records that got stolen.
Oh, man.
And I never replaced it. My Thriller album was in there as well, but I have another Thriller. But my Off the Wall, my Thriller, and that New Edition album were in that collection that got stolen. And I never replaced that New Edition one.
Dang. I'm going to turn that on later. That's a...
Man, they had a lot.
That whole album was good. That was a great album.
You know what song just came to my mind as we were talking about New Edition and LL Cool J? Was it Round the Way Girl, where he said... LL's like, talk about the girl with the New Edition Bobby Brown button on your sleeve.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, hey! Yep. Connect the dots. Back from Crush Groove. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I always like some of the tracks Bobby Brown had in his solo career where he would start rapping at the end of those. Every little step. I mean, every little step you take, I used to know that whole rap part at the end. Like,
yep.
I drive 85, 50, SEC. When I'm on the mic, you got to see me. I mean, we used to sing it all the time. That was a great song and video. The big white block letters and stuff.
One of my favorites. Oh, yes. So good. That's a good song. Oof.
Great song.
That's a good song.
Yeah,
every little step, my prerogative.
My prerogative.
Yeah.
For me, Every Little Step is like one of the best songs.
On Our Own from the Ghostbusters 2 soundtrack.
Yes.
Bobby has some hits.
Great song. Yeah. Ooh, Every Little Step is so good.
Yeah, so Every Little Step is a great song. Yeah.
So good.
I love that song.
He had me wondering what a tenderoni was. I was looking up Chef Boyardee to try to find
it. Gotta find that can that Bobby talked about.
What's this tenderoni stuff, man? I had beefaronis as a kid.
That really is like a marketing opportunity. Like, you really should start putting out tenderonis. I would eat it. That's a good like winter kind of tenderoni. Heat them up, as my man Travis says. Like, heat them up.
It's funny, you know how people speak in movie quotes and stuff like that. I'm, like, whenever I hear these names, I kind of speak in some of the hip hop quotes. Like Tribe Called Quest is like some of our favorites, and it's like, remember in the one song, it's like check Ralph Tresvant for sensitivity.
Yep. I can't ever. Ralph Tresvant's name is check Ralph Tresvant for sensitivity.
Exactly. Yeah. And I swear that somebody references Johnny Gill just as my, you know, like in one of the lyrics, and I can't picture it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no.
Good stuff.
It's amazing how everybody's kind of cross-referenced and indexed somehow.
Yep.
Oh, man. The web is very intricate.
Yep.
Absolutely.
There were some guys I see in the cast that I don't really know much about. Sweet G was the Fever DJ, and Hal Montag, Danceteria DJ. I don't know if these guys were bigger than that, but Be Fine.
Yeah, Be Fine was Be Fine and Paul Anthony. Those were the guys from Full Force.
Oh, they list him as Paul George, like the basketball player. Paul George? In the cast that I found. Okay, there's a Full Force.
Oh, yeah, he is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but if you are an old school hip-hop fan, this is a must-see. I regret not seeing it sooner.
Me too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I also appreciate that the stereo from the prize was from Crazy Eddie.
Yes. Crazy Eddie. Yes.
What a throwback. What a East Coast New York throwback.
Crazy Eddie.
I remember those ads. Crazy
Our prices
Eddie.
Insane. Yeah.
He got busted for embezzlement or something, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he had
the real crazy
legal Eddie. Issues.
Yeah, legal issues.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there was other acts that tried to emulate the success of New Edition, like Another Bad Creation. Remember those guys?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And there was another.
They were actually founded by Michael Bivins.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Are they the ones that sang Aisha?
Yes.
Yep.
At the playground.
At the playground.
Playground.
That was a pretty good song too.
Yeah.
Aisha and Playground were good.
Aisha. And I remember now Chris Cross dissed them on their big hit Jump. Remember? Mm-hmm. Don't try to compare us to another bad little fad.
Because
they were being compared to another bad creation. And Chris Cross wanted to have a little bit more street cred because they were like really rapid. You know, like maybe we can go down a rabbit hole for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, besides, like, we've talked about this before with movies from that era where there was still a lot of homophobia and fatphobia, but you know, if you contextualize it enough properly, then you can still enjoy the movie. But it's just a very enjoyable, fun little romp.
Yeah, one thing I have to do, I didn't even realize until after I finished watching it again. I watched it again last night just because I was just like, all right, let me just make sure that I just watch it again because I just enjoy it. But the DVD has an option to watch it with commentary. And I was like, oh, man, I should have watched it with that on. Because the commentary is from Blair Underwood, the director, Michael Schultz, and Source Magazine senior editor, Brett Johnson. I'm like, oh man, that would have been pretty cool. See what they had to say. So now I gotta go back and watch it again, like the third time in like a 1 week period, but with the commentary on.
I was just looking up now that the guy that played Beaker, Charles Stettler, he had something to do with Disorderlies also.
Hmm.
He was a producer and actor, and he was known for Crush Groove, Who's the Man, and Disorderly. I think we gotta put Who's the Man on our list if it's not on already. Also.
Oh yeah, Who's the Man? Yeah.
I've always wanted to see that because I'm a fan of Dr. Dre and Ed Lover, but
I forgot really about that movie.
Just get that on the list.
Yeah, I think he was one of the producers of Disorderlies in Who's the Man. And then he was the actor Beaker in this Crush Groove. He was tied into this crew. Nice.
I did enjoy in the beginning. Buff Love is ironing his shoelaces.
Yes.
That made me laugh.
I'm not even gonna lie. I did that before with the fat laces
because the fat laces.
Fat laces, they would twist. So you had to keep them perfect. You had to keep them flat. And when you were putting them in your shoes, you have to take your time because they would twist.
Art imitates life, for real.
Yeah.
For real, I definitely did
that before.
Oh, those fat laces were the thing in the mid-80s. Oh, man. I love those. I had a few different colors, combinations. I had a blue and orange one. I had red and black. Those were awesome. Yeah. We used to call them New Yorkers. I don't know if did you guys ever hear them referred to as New Yorkers? The laces?
No. Huh.
Nah.
Maybe that was a Philly area thing. I don't know. There was this place by me in Levittown, PA called I-95 Marketplace. It was a big indoor flea market. And they would
They sold
a ton of different unique items. But like all the 80s nostalgia stuff, I would get there. The stickers for your sticker books, the fat laces. It was just
perfect.
It was a perfect place. For
awesome.
It. I think my favorite fat laces were I had a pair of lime green and black ones, and the lime green glowed in the dark.
Oh,
those were my favorite fat laces.
I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glow in the dark was a thing back then.
Put them on some black and white kicks and have them glow.
I bet you can probably find them online. They had that same weave interwoven pattern. I could picture it. You know, I have to kind of Google it later, but there's fat laces and you never tie it. Don't tie your shoes. You don't tie them. They just lay horizontally across like about four rows.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good memories. Did we enjoy the music? Obviously, we kind of talked about it already.
We did enjoy the music.
Yeah.
We sure
did. Yeah. The music was great. I mean, I had the soundtrack on wax. I still have the soundtrack on wax. It still plays. Yeah.
Holly Rock was the one song by Sheila E. She did.
Holly Rock.
Yep. Yep. And I don't think a plot could be made today. I don't think. I mean, the origin story of Def Jam. I guess you could do it in a more realistic fashion, but this was just.
It had to be a more serious version of it.
Yeah.
But doing
that's kind of what I said too.
Yeah.
Is it a semi-biopic, but yeah, tweak it, make it more realistic. Yeah. That's basically what I said.
Mm-hmm. This is from what we read, the budget was $3 million for this and it made $11 million at the box office. Solid.
Good work by them.
Yep. All right, let's do our ratings. So, Boogie, bring that funky flick back. Bring that funky flick back. Or leave it in the vault.
Bring that funky flick back. Yeah. Absolutely.
Dino Wright?
Bring that funky flick back.
Yes, definitely bring that funky flick back. I wish it was more readily available. It was too hard to find again. A lot of these
should be in Amazon Prime again.
Yeah, you gotta pay to stream this on most services.
Yep.
Unless you're like Boogie and you have the collection. Bam!
There it is. He just showed up a DVD on this on the call. Readily available, arm's reach. Hip Hop Movie Club is produced by your HHMCs, JB, Boogie, and Dino Wright. Theme music by Boogie. Check us out on TikTok and Instagram at Hip Hop Movie Club. On the next episode of the Hip Hop Movie Club podcast, your HHMCs will review 8 Mile. It drops in 2 weeks. Subscribe today in your favorite podcast app and you won't miss it. Shout out to you listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
And remember, don't hate. Orchestrate.
Orchestrate.
Yes. Shout out to Brain Freeze Trivia in the Lehigh Valley. Check out the Instagram, brain_freeze_trivia_time. That's Brain Freeze Trivia Time on Instagram.